Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. If you're in the luckiest 1% of humanity, you owe it to the rest of humanity to think about the other 99%. It's not how much we give, but how much love we put into giving. One of those quotes is from Mother Teresa, and the other is from yesterday's 10th richest person on the planet, Warren Buffett. Two people that occupy different ends of the socioeconomic spectrum, but two people with the same message. Consider what you can and give it to charity. Inspired by those messages, today on Office Hours we will get into the business of charities. Who are the people in the charity sector? How do they help others? And how has the business changed after the recent cost of living increases? To help me answer these questions and more, I'm joined by Esther Lay, Director of Communications and Fundraising at Médecins Sans Frontières Luxembourg, or Doctors Without Borders.
Hi.
And also Miriam Jacobi, Strategy, Quality and Innovation Manager at the Croix Rouge Luxembourg, and in English, the Red Cross, and in Luxembourgish?
Lettenbeuerigkeit.
Perfect. You left me off the hook by not saying about it. So before we get into the charities, let's just get a little bit of your backstories and how you ended up in Luxembourg.
I'm a Luxembourger, so I grew up in the west part of Luxembourg, but now living in Belgium, in Arlon, because I couldn't offer me here a house, unfortunately.
I have a couple of episodes about the housing problems in Luxembourg, so maybe you can check those out. So, and how did you get involved with the Red Cross?
Started already as a child. Huh? I was like the little child knocking at the door, asking for money. But I wanted to put the discussion that you just before did on Mother Teresa, because as a child, it was one of my person that I was looking forward, and that's why I started to be a nurse.
So she was your inspiration?
Yeah, it was my inspiration.
Excellent.
So it's funny
that
you spoke about it. The second was the song about Bono. Do they know it's Christmas? It's something that reminds me every time that it's really important. We can't look away.
So you're a lot younger than me, though. That came out in the mid-80s. When did that song, when did you start to listen to that song?
It was like my dad and my mom was listening that song. And after the while, I was like a U2 fan. So that's why it caps as my favorite song.
I hope I'm not as old as your dad and mum. I think I'm younger than that, but we'll move on. So that inspired you to get involved with the Red Cross. And Esther, how did you get involved in Médecins Sans Frontières and how did you end up in Luxembourg?
Well, I ended up in Luxembourg because my grandfather was Luxembourgish, actually. I was working with the French government before, both in the healthcare system, but also in the international relationship. And I wanted to act a bit more, to do like a bit more for people who were vulnerable out of the system and in countries where you don't have any access to healthcare. And I joined Médecins Sans Frontières Luxembourg 6 years ago.
So this is one of my cheerier questions I'm going to bring forward. So didn't you find working for the government that you were helping people? Isn't that what governments are there to do?
Oh, it's true. I think that most of European governments are doing a lot to help people. But because we are in like rich countries, we can afford to help people. But in other part of the world, you don't have all the mechanisms that we have here. And I really wanted to get involved in that and to raise awareness also about like people's lives and conditions.
Literally the Doctors Without Borders.
Absolutely.
Let's find out a little bit about the charities then. So what do they do at the moment? What do they cover?
The Red Cross is a big movement. So we are representing in every country over the world. But here in Luxembourg, for example, we are working in health, in social activities, but as well with youth, people who are living in the streets.
So if I donate to the Red Cross Luxembourg, is that going to people in Luxembourg? Is it going to the international chapter?
So it goes on both sides. When we are raising up some specific campaigns, it goes for international. But we are also raising campaigns for here, the national needs. For example, for the refugees who are coming here, you need to understand it. If you give €2, we can support with 10 euros because part of it is supported by the government or other foundations here in Luxembourg.
Is that the same for MSF?
This is a big difference between Médecins Sans Frontières and I think like most of the organization. Médecins Sans Frontières back in 2016 refused to receive public funding. Why did we receive that? It was following the Turkey-European deal where European governments decided to, externalize their policy regarding migrants. And we wanted to have freedom of speech and freedom of action. And because we had and we still have programs regarding migrants, we didn't want to receive any more like public funding, not to be told, okay, you can't intervene in that context or you can't have operation in the Mediterranean Sea.
So my understanding of the situation, you probably need to be a little bit careful about the way you say it, but the EU effectively gave a load of money to Turkey and to Libya and maybe some other countries and said, keep them there because we don't want a migrant crisis. So MSF takes pride in its independence, I think. What's the origin story of the MSF?
Well, the origin of MSF, it was funded back in 1971 by French doctors, but also journalists. And it was funded with the Biafra crisis in Nigeria. And like core fundamentals of Médecins Sans Frontières is to raise our voice for the patients that we are treating. We are working on both sides. The first side, of course, is treating patients because we are a medical humanitarian organization. But we are also here to raise awareness and speak out for the people that can't speak out. And in order to maintain this neutrality independence, we needed to be completely independent. So this is why we are 100 private funded.
Yeah, so there's probably a spectrum then. So government's obviously publicly funded, and then so the Red Cross. So if I give €2, €8 come from the government?
From the government, for example. But it depends really on what kind of project we are supporting. So sometimes the government will not support us with anything. We have some services where it's 100% supported by donations. There are a lot of foundations who are giving money to charity, so we are part of that. So it's always then we propose a project, what the government will maybe support or not support. That's why it's crucial to have these donations from the public, because without that, we can't function.
So you mentioned that you do some work within Luxembourg. And then if you think about the international chapter and what you do internationally, how does that get coordinated?
So there are different clusters in every country. There is a health cluster, it's a logistic cluster, a lot of different clusters, depending on the needs, what we observed in the field. And in that clusters, there are a lot of other NGOs coordinating who is doing what, in which regions, which are the targets of the people, because not everyone is targeting everyone. So yeah. These will always depend on the decision who is taking in these clusters with other NGOs on what are we supporting.
So you coordinate across your charities then. So let's say, for example, in Ukraine, you would then say, well, we've already got a footprint there, we'll focus there, and Médecins Sans Frontières would focus somewhere else. Is that how it would work?
Yeah, it could work like that, actually. Like when you've got like a major conflict where you've got like several humanitarian organizations that are in the project, then you're trying not to overlap with your activity. So it means that in Médecins Sans Frontières, we are sending like what we are calling exploration teams. Exploration teams that are there to assess the needs. So if the need is covered by the government or any other organization, then we don't go and we don't do anything.
So you complement and not compete direct. But even though you effectively compete for the public's money in terms of donations.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Okay.
No. Mm-hmm. I think that there is solidarity. Like solidarity is at the heart of every organization that you might have here in Luxembourg. So if we want those values to leave, then we've got to apply them. Okay. And it's not only for our patients, but it's also for the colleagues around. We're all like humanitarian workers. And in the field and in the project, it's very important to work hand in hand with that. Because, for example, UNICEF was the organization providing for food supplies, children affected by malnutrition, for example. So we were using UNICEF material, and we are sending material too that is used by other organizations. and by the International Red Cross in Turkey 2 or 3 years ago.
We are working really hand in hand. We are never in conflict with others. Maybe there can be other ideas or approaches where we don't agree with each other. That's for sure. But we never, ever are opposite, and we are more really working hand in hand when we are seeing needs in the field. And even when, for example, the Red Cross is doing an assessment on different needs, we will contact Médecins Frontières and ask them, can they support this center, please? Because we are covering, for example, the shelter needs and wash needs of this camp.
So you know where each other are strong in different parts of the...
Yes.
And I expect that in a certain situation, Médecins Sans Frontières, you're focused on the health aspects. So when people are better, you then need other charities there to then support them as they leave the hospital.
Yeah, it's because we all have our purposes and our role in the project, and we don't overlap, or we're trying not to do, because this is not what people need. The vulnerable people we're taking care of are the people that are excluded from everything, actually. We're talking about women giving birth. We're talking about like malnourished children. We're talking about people caught into conflicts, displaced people, migrants. Those people, they need like effective care. So we need to be very efficient in the way we are operating in the field. And we need to be efficient also because we are private funded, or like funded by people also, or by governments. So we've got responsibilities.
So let me just pick up on that. There's sometimes people complain about charities and say, yeah, you give the money to charity, but half of it gets caught up in administration and not that much gets through to the front line. How do you make sure that it is effective and there is value for money for the donations?
That's a very good question, Adam, and thank you for raising that, because it's very important that people know how the money is handled. In Médecins Sans Frontières, all our accounts are audited externally at a country level, but also at the international level for the whole organization, but also in the project. In Médecins Sans Frontières, we are making sure that no more than 14% of the donation is used for general administration. So it means that more than 85% of all donation is going directly to the project, so directly to the patient.
When I moved to Luxembourg, I thought, oh, I want to give some money to good causes. I know, why don't I play the lottery, the Euro Millions? And I started to play that, and I looked into it, and I'm buying a ticket for a euro. I think it was the other way around. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was only about 15 cents in the euro was going to good causes and the rest was going to administration. So assuming the Red Cross is similar.
We are always audited. We have to follow KPIs, and we have always to justify with everything, even if you buy a cup of coffee. Even the 2 euro, you have to justify.
It's a good job that I bought Esther's coffee when she arrived there.
That's for sure. And this is why I said thank you very much, because you're helping MSF by doing that. One thing to add is that in Luxembourg, we've got a unit which is called Luxor, Luxembourg Operational Research. So I know that for larger audiences, it's not very well known, but we've got like teams of doctors, epidemiologists or researchers that are going directly to the project to improve them.
So this is like running experiments to find out what is most effective and what isn't.
Absolutely. The goal of the team is to improve the treatments that we are offering to patients. I can take an example. We've conducted a study on malnourished children. Children from 0 to 5 years old are really vulnerable when it comes to malnutrition. And with malnutrition, it leads to dehydration. We've got like often those little children coming a bit too late at the hospitals. And when the children is suffering from dehydration, it's very important to give them, you know, something like to get more water in the body. But in the WHO guidelines,
the World Health Organization,
the IV was not recommended because it could have heart problems. So we were trying with water or like solution on an oral way.
Yeah.
And our team, the Luxembourg team, like conduct a research with trials with children, putting them like short IVs and long IVs, and notice that the rehydration was way better with the IV without having like problems in the heart. And so the World Health Organization is going to change the guidelines, saying that children from 0 to 5 years old can receive IV. And this is major, because it means that like every government all around the world is going to apply those new guidelines. And that was made by our Luxembourgish team.
So not only is the money going to the good causes, when that money's being spent, they're doing research to make sure that it's being spent in the most effective way, and actually giving people intravenous treatment for dehydration is better and as good as orally, despite the guidelines telling you not to do it in the past.
Absolutely. We're trying to improve the treatments.
So just before we move to a break, where are you currently active? We hear of the main flashpoints. Are there other places that you're active that haven't hit the headlines?
Well, in Médecins Sans Frontières, we are in more than 75 countries all around the world. Most of our operations, they are in Africa because it's 60% of our activities, and the main countries that we are supporting is DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudan, Yemen, Sudan, and Palestine. That was like back in 2024 and 2025. We are also working in contexts that like nobody talks about.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about a crisis at the Yemen in the moment. I mean, I kind of know that things are really bad in Sudan, but Yemen's one that wasn't in the headlines for me.
Yeah, it's been like since 2010, this country is living a civil war. And with the escalation of the conflict in the Middle East, there is more and more issue in the country, and there is like severe problem of malnutrition. People are caught in conflict, and this is the second country where we intervene, and we are running like many projects, from supporting maternity wards to supporting like children malnourished, primary healthcare, vaccination campaigns. And it's true that like nobody is talking anymore about the Yemeni crisis. Mm. The same goes for Haiti, a bit everywhere. And what is important for MSF is to go where nobody is looking at and to raise awareness about those situations.
A Red Cross working in places that we wouldn't be aware of at the moment?
I think all the countries
all of the
that...
above.
Yes. I think the thing is that as Red Cross is present in all these countries needs more view and more support. But unfortunately, they are not in the scope for the moment of a lot of governments, but as well of foundations and people who support them. The thing is that the Red Cross over the world are trying, with the money that they have, where I'm talking about efficiency, are supporting as much as possible and trying to identify the needs who are really essential, who are using that they can survive. And this is sometimes real difficult when you are talking with humanitarian working in these areas. It's that you need always take a choice. And this is sometimes not easy to do and very difficult. And sometimes you are coming back and you are thinking about it, because maybe you think that the decision that you took in the field was maybe not the right one, or you thought that maybe you had to change it. Sometimes it's not easy, and so that's what was explained. It's that Yemen, Somalia, a lot of countries where we are not speaking about it, Burundi, Congo, where a lot of people, displaced people, are trying to flee the situation, and the needs are there.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get back. We'll get into some of the other Chewy questions. In 100th place is Germany with 0.39%. Joint 97th is France with 0.45%. Way above in 64th place is the UK with 0.75%. Unfortunately, Luxembourg does not feature in the top 100 most generous countries. I'm hoping the reason is we're too small, not too miserable. These numbers, the average percent of income donated, fall way below the first place country, who on average donates 2.83% of income to charity. Welcome back to Office Hours. In the first half, we met members of the charity sector, Miriam and Esther. And in the second half, we'll get into some more of the chewier questions. And to start off with a bit of fun, any guesses for the country that gives the highest donations of 2.83% of their income to charity?
I will say like Switzerland.
Switzerland?
No, I was like more thinking about Sweden or Norway.
The answer is Nigeria. Africa is the most generous continent. And Europe is the least generous, which was something that surprised me.
Yeah, that's me really too. Super surprising.
Yeah, oh,
really surprising.
The links to the source will be in the show notes. Do you see a reduction in donations with the cost of living crisis?
I'm not sure that this is the cost of living crisis that might, reduce the donation. Here in Luxembourg, I think we are quite okay and quite lucky because Luxembourgish, they have like a long tradition of charity giving. And I think that they are quite generous. There is a culture of giving back. And we can see that in the funeral, you know, when you're losing a loved one, what you're doing is not like sending flowers, but you're sending donation to a charity organization, which is a tradition that is not that common even in Europe.
Yeah, I did not know about that.
Overall, Luxembourgish are really generous.
You're the Luxembourger, Miriam. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
The month of donation as well is something that we have in Luxembourg. When all the buses have like the Red Cross thing on there.
The month of donation, the Red Cross is during the whole of month of April. And the idea is really to do awareness on donation for international activities, but as well on local activities, because without these donation, we can't function. And this is essential for the whole month.
And it's branded as the month of donation. So is that in part to just encourage donations, whether it's to Red Cross or another charity, be it Maison Frontiere or UNICEF or whatever?
The philosophy behind it is really to give awareness to the people so that they can engage. And it's not only money engagement. So that's, for me, it's really important to say. It's also giving some time to people who need it, to have a place where they can share history or discussions. It's also about trying to have support with blood donation, because Luxembourg Red Cross has this blood center in the city center and are looking for volunteers all the time, because if you give blood, you support indirectly someone lying in a hospital here in Luxembourg who need it.
A message is, don't just think of donations about monetary all the time. Think about your blood. Think about your time. So what other ways could people get involved if they wanted to donate non-financially?
So, and then it can be as well to be part of trainings. For example, we are looking also for experts in different kind of areas. That can be engineering, it can be IT, it can be as well psychological support.
So that's training people. Who would they be training?
Yeah, for example, we have a nice project, Let's Work, where we are looking for expertise who trains refugees on how to apply on jobs, or maybe how to write a CV, how to present them during an interview. So little things that you can do by your own, so with your expertise, and you come maybe once a month, or it can be also once a year when we are organizing the concert Philosophie de Charité. There we have also, you can also come for a day or a half day or 2 hours to support us.
And it all counts.
Everything counts.
And do you see a rise in giving to MSF during the month of donation?
No, actually, the month of donation of April, we are not like, you know, concerned.
You don't see a big increase just as people think, oh, I see the...
No, not at all. Like, we are like running like fundraising programs all year long here in MSF. And the month where people are giving the most, it's obviously Christmas time. So December is a very joyful month for our patient, because this is where people are the most keen to make a donation.
That's really positive to hear. I would have thought that many people would be like, oh, Christmas is coming, I'm going to give less because I've got to buy the kids presents, I've got to pay for this, I've got to pay for that. But they're actually having the Christmas spirit. The Christmas
Absolutely,
spirit works.
Yeah, because this is what Christmas is about here in Luxembourg. In theory. And I think that people do think that and do that. And so, yeah, it's a great time of the year to make a donation, and then you receive also your fiscal receipt for
end of the tax year.
Exactly, the tax receipt for the year to come. But yeah, we can see like people are doing and making donation in very different ways. A lot of them are doing like regular donations, so they are regular givers. Like every month they are making a donation to MSF because it's easier for them, and it's of course very useful for us because we can plan what we're going to do. Like people.
So you prefer the monthly standing order as opposed to the one-off donation at the end of the year, just before the tax year ends?
Well, everything is useful, you know. Okay. But like, it's true that the regular donation is very easy for us to plan what would be the resources of the organization for next year, so we can plan our operation. Because like, behind the fundraising teams and the communication teams, you've got the operational and the medical teams.
Yeah.
And those operations and medical, they see needs in the field, in the project, but they have to know if they can go there. Like, you know, if you're opening in a hospital, like doing a vaccination campaign, or like treating, I don't know, malnourished children, this does not come for free.
So in part one, we talked about the efficiency of the treatments that are being given. How efficient are the fundraising activities? And one thing that always bugs me, the only people that send me letters are the government and charities. Is it efficient to be sending me letters all the time? I sometimes think save on the postage and raise money through social media.
Yeah, that's very true. And yes, we do send letters. To be perfectly honest, we could think that digital donations are increasing, that people are making like more and more donation on websites or on social media. But like, in the numbers, that's not very true here in Luxembourg. The paper and the donation through like wire are like much more like used by the Luxembourgish population than the digital donation. Of course, we've got like different range of possibilities to make a donation, but the one that is still like very efficient is the one by post.
I guess it kind of makes sense because you're the only person still sending letters. I know you're the only person still sending letters.
Absolutely.
Right? Whereas I get bombarded by everyone sending me like Instagram reels and all that.
Emails,
kind of stuff.
Like newsletters. Yeah. It's true that we're getting lost. And like, when you've receive a paper also, you, it's not only like make a donation, like we explain why it's important to make a donation, for what conflict, what cause, what project that we are supporting, and how with like €1 you could really help us.
And I guess with that piece of paper that comes, you might leave it on the kitchen sideboard and then pick it up and then read it again later, whereas if it's an advert on social media, once it's gone, it's kind of gone.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is like, you know, many ways also to donate, not only like regular donation or one-off donation, but also you could like put MSF or any other charity of your choice in your will. And this is one very effective way actually to help our organization. Do you know that one project out of six couldn't be funded in MSF in general, at the overall, without legacy donation?
Without being too techie, is that tax efficient? Does that get kind of left off your estate? So it's...
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's tax efficient. Of course, I'm not like a notary and I'm not working for the state. So I'm not going to give you advices, but yes, it is.
Okay. Let's hope it's not too efficient. I'm planning on staying alive a little bit longer, but I probably should get that will sorted out. One thing that we talked about, getting involved, do you have a view on the effective altruism cause? This idea that if you should make money the way you best make money and give the money. So Sam Bankman-Fried was the famous one. I'm going to go and make loads of money being a hedge fund manager and then give all the money to a charity, and that's the best thing I can do.
I think it's very personal, you know, the way you want to conduct your life. Well, what I'm trying to do is to not harm. So I think that, I don't know, and this is very personal, you know, you can live and conduct your life the way you want to conduct it. But I think that one thing that might guide you is the fact that if you can't do good, maybe try not to do bad.
I like that. We seem to be bringing it back to nearly where we started. Whatever your point of view, whether it's Mother Teresa or if it's Warren Buffett, do some good out there and don't do bad. So let's start to bring it to a close. Any lasting messages, or if people want to get into contact or donate, how would they do that?
Like, if people want to donate, want to know more about the project we're working on, they could go to our website, msf.lu. And in 2026, actually, the Luxembourgish MSF section is celebrating its 40 years anniversary in the country. We're going to have like all year long events in the country. So please go on the website or on the social media. Keep in touch with us because we will be around.
Just before Easter, down at Nyminster Avenue, where there was an exhibition. So more events like that through
Absolutely.
The rest of the year. For the Red Cross?
For the Red Cross, you go on www.croix-rouge.lu. And you
www.croix-luxembourg.
No, Rouge.
R-O-U-G-E.
It's in, unfortunately, it's in French. Huh?
Okay.
And there you find the first page. We have always different campaigns open, so you can only click and it's very easy to donate. And I hope that if you are more on the national level, you can donate on the national level. And if you want to have more a specific project, you can even donate for a specific project on the international level. So it's with histories and stories behind, and so that you understand why are you donating and for what you are
so
donating.
You can see the impact it's going to have. So thank you very much for coming in, and thank you to the listeners.